Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner. I'm Coach Andrew Poritz from Ingenuity Coaching. I help people discover and fulfill their passions and greatness. My mission, to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to make those dreams come true. You can visit my website at myfuturecoach.com and follow me on Twitter at Coach Andrew. If you're listening live and you have a question, the phone number is 646-929-2893. You'll be able to listen to the show on the phone, and if you press number one on your phone, I'll know you have a question. We also have a live chat room right on the show page where you can feel free to join in. My guest tonight, and by the way, tonight is my last show of 2012, possibly my last show of all time if the world ends on the 21st of December, but as of now, my last show of 2012. My guest tonight is Adrian Gusoff, who is the author of Dirty Yiddish Slang and Zen Jewish Humor. She's currently working on her next book, Yiddish for Hipsters. She's the founder and owner of Boobygram, Jewish Grandma Singing Telegrams, and the creator of Boobygram greeting cards with recycled paper greetings. Her online Yiddish dictionary is one of the most popular on the web with nearly a million hits. She's a humorist, freelance writer, lecturer, and college professor. You can learn more about Adrian at www.boobygram.com and at www.artofepiphany.com. Adrian, are you with me?
I'm here, darling.
Hello, darling.
Hello.
I'm so excited. So excited. I might have to talk like this the whole time.
I know, it's very addictive, isn't it?
It really is.
You kind of lapse into it, and you can't. And before you know it, you sound like your grandfather or your Uncle Heshy. It's really terrible.
I really do. I had several grandparents who spoke Yiddish. Actually, four. Three out of the four were born in Eastern Europe.
In the old country.
And my mother's mother was a first generation American. But basically, I come from a long line of Yiddish-speaking people, and which is, you know, a language that is, you know, maybe not as big as it used to be, but a lot of people know it and love it, and I think maybe it's making a little bit of a renaissance.
I think it is making a renaissance. You know, it was sort of... Well, you know, as I'm sure you know, I don't know if your listeners know, but back in the, well, obviously in Europe, but certainly in the early part of the 20th century, especially in New York, where there were a lot of Jewish immigrants, Yiddish was a street language, you know, millions of people spoke it, and there was Yiddish theater and Yiddish literature and Yiddish newspapers, and it was a very active, living language. And as that first generation of immigrants died out, the language sort of, you know, I guess kind of went into the background. It became a secret language that probably your parents spoke, maybe, and my parents spoke so that the kids wouldn't understand, right?
Absolutely.
And you picked up a few words here and there. There were certain things that maybe you said in Yiddish that made more sense in Yiddish that didn't make sense in English, or, you know, just like a word like schlep, I mean, or schwitz, you know,
sure.
You know, it just makes more sense in Yiddish. But that, you know, a lot of people who are, let's say, in the baby boomers and younger really don't speak fluent Yiddish, unless you're a Hasidic Jew, you know. I think there's sort of a nostalgia for it. And it's coming back in that they're teaching it in colleges. I just took it in at college. I took because I wanted to see if I could become more fluent. And I, you know, like a lot of baby boomers, I know phrases, I know words, but if I had to put a sentence together, a proper grammatical sentence, forget about it.
Hey, that's not Yiddish. You can't fool me.
I know. It isn't. But you know, Yiddish theater is coming back, actually. There's the Yiddish Folksbein Theater in New York
mm-hmm.
that They do plays in Yiddish. They do like even Shakespeare in Yiddish. And if you go see one of those plays, they have the translations across the stage, you know, with those red dot lights. What are they? I don't even know what to call them, like LED kind of subtitles. I guess like the way they do the libretto at the opera.
Oh, okay, sure.
You know, it's like, you know, you can see the translation, simultaneous translation.
Right.
So you don't need to speak Yiddish to see those plays. And I don't know, you know, the klezmer music is sort of come back. And
I was actually going to try to find a little piece of klezmer music to introduce you with, but I just ran out of time.
There's some great stuff out there, and, you know, that's another way that people are getting into Yiddish as well, learning the old Yiddish songs, the old klezmer songs. So, I mean, it's such an expressive language.
Yeah, I was growing up, funny you mentioned the speaking in a language so that the kids wouldn't understand. Now, my parents sometimes did the double secret code, which was not just speaking Yiddish, but spelling in Yiddish.
Spelling in Yiddish?
Spelling in
with
Yiddish.
With the Yiddish Hebrew letters or with English?
No, I mean like they would speak, instead of just saying it, they would say the letters of the Yiddish word, which is so, you'd have to double translate it. You'd have to.
No, but I'm saying like, you know, Schwitz would be like Shin, Hey, you know, Vol,
oh, no,
like
no,
that,
no,
or
no,
they would just
no,
be
not,
like S-H.
That would have been triple secret code. That would have been.
By the way, that's
their brains would have exploded along with mine. You know, but I always remember, as a kid, occasionally we'd go up to the Catskills, which, as anybody knows who's been to the Catskills, or if you've ever seen a movie like The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz.
Oh, I love that movie.
That's really like the.
Or Dirty Dancing.
Or Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where really a lot of this stuff took place. That was what they called the Borscht Belt, where all the comedians would make the circuit for many, many years. A lot of the biggest comedians of, you know, our day certainly came out of that place.
Yeah. I mean, even Woody
Allen.
Today. Even Woody Allen and, you know, I mean, all of them.
Woody
know,
Allen.
From Henny Youngman.
Anybody named Hecky, Shecky, I mean.
Anybody with a Y, Benny. You know,
exactly.
Right?
They all came out of that thing. And, you know, from time to time, I would go with my family. We would go to the Concord or Grossinger's or Kutcher's or one of those places. And it would never fail that there would be a show, you know, a comedian would be on. And, you know, sometimes my parents would bring us in with them. And the comedian would tell a joke in English with a Yiddish punchline.
So the kids wouldn't understand.
And then everybody
right.
would die laughing. And I would say, what do you say? It doesn't translate, was the answer. It just does. It can't be translated. It really, you know, and they never even tried. So to this day, I don't remember the joke. I just remember the frustration of not knowing what it meant. For that alone, I have had a desire to learn some more of this language.
Did your parents speak Yiddish a lot in the house? I mean, did you pick up?
No. I mean, only you know, the phrase here and there, word here and there, or again, usually as a way of making sure we didn't understand what they were talking about. But if I'd go, you know, when we go visit Grandma and Grandpa, then it was always a lot of it. My grandparents spoke primarily Yiddish more than English, and sometimes they would fall into it. You know, they couldn't help themselves. They'd just go fall back into it, and they'd have to remember, oh no, wait, I'm speaking to an alien.
Well, my great-grandmother, who lived with my grandparents when I was growing up, I don't think she spoke any English. I mean, I barely remember even having a conversation with her, a real conversation with her. But she only spoke Yiddish. My mother speaks fluent Yiddish, but, I think my father spoke Yiddish. You know, when he was growing up, because his father spoke Yiddish. I think my father, you know, that was his first language, but then he kind of forgot it, you know, when he started school. And you know, my mother would have to speak to him so slowly and in such basic language that after a while I could understand it. You know? So it was, the point of the secret language was kind of nullified by the fact that she was speaking, you know, in, you know, baby, basically Yiddish baby talk.
So now, when did you get the first idea to start with the Yiddishisms?
Well, I had the idea for the Jewish grandma singing telegram thing. That's how the whole thing started. The idea, I don't even know where it came. I mean, I don't even know. It just popped into my head. Bubby, like a Bubby Graham, like a Bubby singing telegram. What would that be? It would be like me dressed up like a Jewish grandma, bringing chicken soup to sick people in the hospital and birthday bagels, and you know. So I had this idea. This was back in the early 80s. I had this idea. So I thought, well, you know, let's run it up the flagpole and see who salutes. So I put an ad in the back of New York Magazine, this is the days when singing telegrams were kind of becoming all the rage, and crazy kinds of singing telegrams. It was like, you know, Buddhagram and all kinds of like crazy singing telegrams. So I put an ad in, and I got a lot of kind of an instant response to it. I got a lot of media attention.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, the first time somebody called me and hired me to do a Bubby Graham, I was so nervous and so afraid that I wouldn't be worth the money that at the time it was $49.95. That's what I charged. The standard price for a telegram in those days was $50. So
wow.
I charged $49.95, and I brought about $60 worth of rugelach with me so that they would feel like they got their money's worth. But I started to write funny songs like Alan Sherman type stuff and original material and collecting jokes and this and that. And, you know, the act really kind of grew. And, you know, when somebody would hire me to do somebody's birthday party, for example, I would take personal information about that person and I would work it into the routine. So it was kind of like a little bit of a roast plus my original material and funny songs and jokes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then I started doing, I had the idea for doing the Jewish grandma on greeting cards. And I submitted the idea to Recycled, and they loved the idea. They just so happened to be looking for a photographic line and an ethic line at the same time. I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And the cards did really, really well for a long time. But it was a lot of work doing those cards because, first of all, it was me dressed up in full drag, you know, with the overstuffing and, you know, the fat suit underneath, which I don't need anymore, you know, and the painted on wrinkles, which I also don't need anymore. But the roll-down stockings with the varicose veins painted directly onto the stockings.
You need those?
No, I don't. I do need those. Still need those.
Okay.
You know, rhinestone glasses, drop dead stunning gorgeous outfit with the sequins on it. You know, gorgeous, and the shopping bags filled with all kinds of props and craziness. You know, rubber chickens and all kinds of silly stuff, and so I had the idea of doing the greeting cards, and I did the greeting cards for several years with Recycled. But it was, like I said, it was a lot of work because, you know, I would come up with the idea for the card, like what I wanted it to say, and then we'd have to go find a location that made sense for the copy. And very often it entailed being inside somebody's house. So we had to find a house that was kind of Bubby-esque, you know, with plastic slipcovers and, you know, chintzy stuff. And, you know, in those days, it wasn't so hard to find. I mean, my grandmother was alive in those days. You could go shoot up at her place.
Mm-hmm.
But slowly, you know, that generation, you know, my grandmother would be like 120 now, so, you know.
But she wouldn't look day over 110.
My grandmother was very young looking because every night before she went to bed, chicken fat all over her face. She was gorgeous. So I started doing the cards, and so
sure.
I really was, and I was getting a lot of media attention. I was on doing a lot of TV shows. I was getting it was in People magazine and the Jerusalem Post, and you know, all kinds of magazines and newspapers all over the world, and it was great fun. But at the time I was single, And I was having a very hard time separating myself from this Bubby character. And guys don't want to date women who remind them of their grandmother. It was very, you know, like...
That's pretty funny.
It was really difficult, you know, because...
You couldn't find somebody with a grandma fetish?
That would have been weird.
Yeah.
It would have been weird. It was very hard. I was just having a hard time. You hear this a lot from performers who have a character. They have a hard time separating from the character. And I was finding that was the case. I mean, I would go out on a gig, you know, and I would, like, pass the mirror in my lobby on the way out the door, and I'd look at myself and I'd say, you know, for this you went to college. I mean, I had a lot of great, you know, funny experiences, and it was wonderful. But after a while, I just thought, I just can't do it anymore. So I hired other people to do the telegrams to me using my material. But then the Bubby Graham agency, you know, Party Entertainment, became like sort of a full service entertainment company. So now I do all kinds of stuff. The Bubby's only one little tiny bit of it. You know, I have celebrity impersonators and samba dancers and belly dancers and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, that's all you. That's all your company.
That's my company, but it's not all me. I don't do any other kind of entertaining.
Right.
But and then with the greeting cards, I kind of stopped doing the grandma as the greeting cards because it just got to be so. It was so labor intensive. Like I said, it could take a full day to shoot one card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go schlepping around to try to find exactly the right setting and the backdrop. And a lot of times, people didn't want you to shoot. Like if I needed to shoot in a store, for example, they didn't like it to shoot in there. There were all kinds of legal things, so we have to like sneak around here. I'm just like a lunatic, you know. And my photographer would like get her camera ready, and you know, you know, it was like it was crazy. So I kind of gave up on that and started to do another kind of greeting cards. It was just, you know, vintage photos with snarky sayings on them. So that's but both my businesses are really kind of come from the Bubby. You know, she's kind of the matriarch of everything I do. And so I have the Bubby website, and then because of the Bubby website, I decided to do a Yiddish dictionary on the Bubby website, just for the love of the language. And a publishing company saw the dictionary, Ulysses Press, who does a whole line of dirty language books. They do like dirty Italian, dirty French, dirty sign language, you know, dirty Chinese, and they wanted to do dirty Yiddish. And she found my website, and she liked my voice and asked me if I wanted to do it, and I was thrilled to do it. So the more I get into it, the more I love it.
Tell me some of your favorite Yiddishisms.
Oh boy! You mean like a Yiddish word or Yiddish?
We want expression, and if you have any from your book, you'd like to share with me.
I have to find the. I have to get a copy of the book here, but.
You don't have a copy of the book.
Well, no, I do have it. It's just a question of is it right at, you know, it's not right at hand.
Okay.
One of my favorite expressions, I love it, is Zolsta Essen a Traulikon Kacken Trentwis. You know what that means?
No.
You should eat a Traulikon and shit transfers. It's just one of those crazy, you know, Yiddish has these great curses in them. They're very creative. I mean, the Yiddish curses are like the sort of the yo mama jokes of the day, mm-hmm. of their day, of their time. You know, they were like little bits of theater, each one, you know, like the most creative. Yeah, I mean, I could say them in Yiddish, but you know, you and your listeners probably won't understand them. But some of them were just you know, the famous one is you should grow with your head in the ground like an onion. That's kind of a a famous one. That's that's the one that everybody seems to know. Your gut should be pulled out of your belly and wrapped around your neck. You know, a Royska schleppen so mein der Kischkes von Boich und a Rumwicklen dein Holz.
That's wonderful.
It's wonderful, yeah. I mean, all your teeth should fall out except one, and in that one you should have a terrible toothache. So, I mean, I don't even know a lot of these things, a lot of them in Yiddish. They translate into English so well.
My father always likes to say things like a brock in dein kepi.
Yeah, a curse on your head.
Yes.
A curse on your head. Yeah.
Exactly.
Beet should grow out of your belly button. And you should piss borscht. That's another good one.
Oh, look at this. We got a couple of people who would like to participate. Couple of listeners who have their hands up.
Oh, good.
All right.
Who?
Somebody
who?
In the 516 area code. I have no idea who this is. 516, I'm going to put you on. Hello, do you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I wanted to know what Adrian's grandparents thought of her Bubby Graham.
Oh, my grandmother loved it. My grandmother, she was on a couple of my cards. I put my grandmother on a couple of my greeting cards.
I think I saw that.
You saw that one? Remember that one? She quelled from this. And my grandfather, unfortunately, had already passed away by the time I started doing that. But my grandmother was very much alive, and she loved it. My aunts and uncles loved it also. She used to have a place up in the Catskills in the bungalow, on the Cuchulain, in the bungalow colony.
Mm-hmm.
And one summer I went up there with my photographer, and we just went crazy. We were just shooting all over the bungalow colony, you know, wherever. And there was one shot of me sitting on the side of the swimming pool, I told her, go sit on the bench behind me, so you'll be in the picture. So, we put her on the card. But I used to use all my whole family was on. My father was in one of the cards. My nephew was in the cards.
Your early days were a big influence on you.
When the grandparents spoke Yiddish, you know,
yeah.
And. And it was a really big part of it was a big part of the culture.
And it's a way of keeping them alive, which is nice.
It's true. That is true. Because when you speak Yiddish, you know, you think about your grandparents. And I think that's why, another reason why the language is coming is there's a sentimental attachment to the language for a lot of baby boomers, because it reminds them of their parents and their grandparents.
Well, it's exactly like right now. I am so hearing my grandparents with us right now.
Yeah, or even here, even the cadence of the language
mm-hmm.
is very, has that. Well, you know, even like Jackie Mason, who speaks in Yiddish, but he has that
Jackie
Yiddish
Mason
kind of influence.
Like
Jackie Mason, he talks like this.
Hello,
you know, it's the cadence.
Yes.
And the
Absolutely.
Sentence structure, you know, the Yiddish sentence structure also is another thing that sort of lives in. Infamy. I don't know if that's the way to say it. You know the syntax.
Yes.
You know, the backwards, like asking a question with asking a question with a question.
Right. Well, that's
that
old joke. So that joke is. So ask me why does a Jew always answer a question with a question? Ask me that right now.
Why does a Jew always answer a question with a question?
And why shouldn't a Jew always answer a question with a question?
Exactly.
Exactly. That's the response. That's the answer. That's the joke. That's the whole joke.
But there's also like, first of all, Yiddish is very sarcastic, I think.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if the language is sarcastic or that Jews are sarcastic and the language reflects it. I don't know. What do you think, caller?
I put her back on.
Put her on. Okay. But which came first, the chicken or the egg? The chicken soup or
the
egg.
The chicken sandwich or the egg sandwich.
The chicken soup or the egg salad. Yeah, I don't know. You know, like, is Yiddish kind of sarcastic? Is it a sarcastic language or a good vehicle for sarcasm because Jews are sarcastic, or are Jews sarcastic because Yiddish is sarcastic? I think it's probably the language is sarcastic because Jews are sarcastic.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to go into hundreds or thousands of years of Jewish history to get the answer to where that came from. And it's just like all the stuff that we carry historically that causes us to be a little caustic and a little cynical and a little humorous and a lot of puns and a lot of jokes.
Right, like also
jokes make you survive, right?
Right. Well, I think that's. I mean, I was going to say exactly that. Is that the Jewish sense of humor is very much a way of just, you know, making sort of the best of a bad situation. You know, if you can't laugh, you're going to cry. So you got to laugh about it. And so there's all those, you know, all what I call Yiddish Zen humor. There's a lot of that, which is you know, sort of jokes that in a way. Maybe only Jews really understand at the deepest level. I mean, maybe somebody who's not Jewish sort of understands sort of why it's funny, but it really you almost have to be Jewish to really understand why it's funny. I mean, the simplest one is, you know, Abe and Heshy are sitting on a park bench, and Abe says, you know, Heshy, life is like a glass of tea. And Heshy says, why is that? Why do you think that is? He says, how should I know? What, am I a philosopher? You know, it's just like, you know, it's just like a very Yiddish mentality.
Well, there's
that
show, Old Jews Telling Jokes on Broadway.
Right.
Or off-Broadway. I'm not
sure.
Well,
it started as a website, I think. And there's a book also that I, you know, yeah. But I know them all, man. I know them all. I mean, it's pretty hard to tell me a Jewish joke that I haven't heard somewhere, you know. But
well, if anybody's listening, they have a great
have a
joke
good one,
that you want to try to stump Adrian with, that would be very cool.
Yeah, see if you can do it.
Now we have another person on who has their hand up.
Okay.
So somebody in the 973 area code. I am giving you a little heads up. I'm going to ask, see what's up over there.
Okay.
Hello, 973. Oop, nope, let me try it again. Hello, 973. Can you hear us?
Hello.
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 I loved Adrian's dirty Yiddish book, and I have a question.
Oh, thank you. Yes, thank you.
Yiddish words have become so mainstream. Why do you think that is? Like, you watch Saturday Night Live, Leno, Letterman, and they all use Yiddish words.
Well, aside from the fact that Yiddish words are just plain funny, right? I mean, some of the words are just, they just sound funnier in Yiddish. I mean, come on, doesn't schwitz sound funnier than sweat? I mean, you know, it just sounds funnier. But obviously, a lot of Jews are in the entertainment business. And so these words just kind of creep into, especially into Hollywood, into the entertainment business. And then they go out into the airwaves and go out into movies and television, and they become part of the American lexicon. You know, I mean, I certainly don't think that, you know, In the United States, I think, I mean, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if there are any callers out there or anybody online who doesn't live in New York or L.A. Who's listening, but I would be curious to know if a word like schlep is common, you know, if you know what the word schlep means. But certainly in New York, it's used in advertising. It's used, I've seen it in the New York Times, not even italicized.
Right.
You know, as a foreign word. I mean, it's practically English.
Well, it doesn't
probably
come up flagged in my spell check.
There's a lot of words that I'm surprised don't come up flagged in spell check. You know, like schmuck, you know.
Yeah.
Unless you spell it with like, sometimes it comes up if you spell it with SH versus SCH, you know.
Right.
But schmaltz, you're schmaltzy, you know, but I don't know. I wonder if those words are common in
chutzpah is another great one. A lot of people will use.
Right, or chutzpah, as what's her name says, Michelle Bachman says, chutzpah. But, you know, these words, you know, obviously Hollywood, you know, and TV, and, you know, they're big, have a lot of Jews in those industries.
Mm-hmm.
And so those words, I mean, there's no other word really like chutzpah, although it's often used incorrectly, or not incorrectly, but like, without the nuance that it really
mm-hmm, right.
that it really has. I mean, a lot of people think chutzpah means balls, like
balls. Yeah, I knew
balls,
you were going to say
you know.
That. Yeah.
Now, somebody who works the bomb squad, you know, may have breath balls, but they don't necessarily have chutzpah.
Right.
I mean, chutzpah is, well, actually, it sort of means audacity. I mean, maybe Obama should have named his book the Chutzpah of Hope. The Chutzpah of Hope.
He could have had the book signing in a kibbutz.
Yeah, or in the Catskills. You know, the joke is, you know, or like the somebody with chutzpah is like the guy who steals, you know, pirates. Software and then calls up for technical help. You know, it's like there's a certain just unbelievable ballsiness about it that's not always nice, but there's a sort of grudging grudging admiration in a way. You know, for somebody to have that much unbelievable. Like, I was just reading an article about this woman. I don't know if you saw this. She somewhere in, like, Tulsa, Oklahoma, she spent 6 hours in a Walmart cobbling together a meth lab from, you know, from the ingredients that she found in the all over here. I mean, who knew that they had it? They usually, like, you know, she
what
put together like
Sudafed or something.
Lithium. She could. She forgot the Sudafed. She wasn't so bright.
She forgot
the
Sudafed.
Yeah.
How
could
you make meth without Sudafed? Everybody knows
that. They say women are not so great. You know,
yeah.
Women are not so good at meth. You know, they say that. But
not so good at meth.
Not so good at meth. Yeah. But she had. I don't know what she had like. Sulfuric acid and lithium. It's like, really? They sell that at Walmart? But anyway, just the notion that she was like, had like pulled all this stuff together off the shelves of Walmart and was like, had like set up a meth lab in Walmart. Now, to me, that's chutzpah.
That is. That might be in the picture should be of that. See
yeah,
this story
I mean,
and you'll know what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's chutzpah. But, you know, even like, you know, David from David and Goliath, you know, I mean, that, you know, a little pisher like him, he thought he could take down a giant with a
mm-hmm.
rock and a slingshot. I mean, that's kind of, you know, it's a sense of confidence that you don't even know, like, does it come from real confidence or does it just come from some form of mental illness? Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference, you know. That's, you know, but... yeah, I mean, I think everybody in this country knows what chutzpah is, pretty much.
Pretty much.
And that's because of the media.
How about a word like schmooze?
I mean, I think that's a great word, and I think people use it a lot. You know, it's sort of taken on another meaning also. I mean, literally, schmooze just means kind of like shoot the shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken on a new meaning. Of networking.
Yeah.
And it's not really what it means in Yiddish, but it's okay, you know, I mean...
Well, I think that's what goes on as you network. So it's sort of the what's going on, you're working the room.
Right. But you're schmoozing people up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah. So I think it's sort of taken on a secondary meaning, which is great. I mean, that's how you keep a language. That's how you keep a language alive.
Mm.
Is to come up with new uses for it, new ways of interjecting it into the vernacular. I mean, there are very few people who speak fluent Yiddish who you would have occasion to speak to on the street, except for Orthodox, not even Orthodox. You know, like. Hasidic Jews, you know, speak Yiddish.
Right.
But an average assimilated Jew does not speak fluent Yiddish unless they're like older than like maybe 80 years old. So, you know, to get those people, to get the younger people younger, and by younger I mean, you know, younger than 80, to use the language again, to find, you know, to develop a love of it and to find a use for it, it's got to have new meaning. It's got to have new relevance.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I tried to do in my book, was to create new ways of using Yiddish, making up new slang. For example, there's very few Yiddish words for sex acts, for sex parts. Well, there's a lot of words for the male genitalia,
yeah.
I'm sure you know. Most people know those words.
Absolutely.
There are.
I think a lot of people don't realize who say those words that's what it means.
That's probably true. But it's the same in English. Can I use, you know, dirty words in this show? I don't know. What you're...
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to lose my license, as you will.
Well, for example, you know, in English, you could call somebody a dick.
Right.
And obviously that has two meanings, you know, in English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same thing in you know, in Yiddish with schmuck. You know, it has the same, basically the
yes.
same two meanings as dick does in English. But there's, can you think of any words off the top of your head for female genitalia?
You mean in English?
No, in English is, you know, thousands of them.
Oh, yeah. No,
in Yiddish.
Yiddish, no. Not off the top of my head.
Well, I looked for them for years. It was a quest of mine to find, because I knew there were at least half a dozen words for male genitalia. I never heard one for female genitalia ever in my life. And so I started to really ask around. I started to ask Yiddish speakers, you know, fluent Yiddish speakers. I called the Daily Fovitz and asked somebody there if she knew a word. And she thought about it. And the only word she could think of wasn't even like a slang word. It was basically was birth canal. That was like the
wow.
the you know, the only word that even was close to that. It was a very technical scientific word. And my husband, who's a photographer, spends a lot of time in B&H, you know, where they're all
yes.
Hasidic Jews. And he became sort of friendly with one of the salesmen, so he asked him, you know, what do you call it? You know, he told him that, you know, that I was on this quest, you know, looking for. And I had, you know, from my dictionary, you know, people would like write in, like my grandmother used to call it this, but it was they were just like family words. You know, they weren't
yeah.
like real. Nobody had like a real sort of universal word that everybody understood. The guy at B&H used the word vagina. It's just, you know, that was
yeah,
the word.
True.
And so I really, really, really searched around, and then I did find some for my book.
Oh, you did after all that.
I did after all that. There is.
I was
going to
make
word.
A suggestion if you didn't find one. I was going to.
Oh
make
yeah.
A, suggestion, if you
yes.
take like a word that would mean lady,
yes,
and maybe a word that would mean peach, a lady peach.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
And that's like, it could kind of, we're going to just make one up and create here,
well,
right
I made,
here,
I made
live.
Up, I made up a bunch of them. I
oh,
made up
okay.
a bunch of them.
Okay, so
well,
you,
for
like,
example,
what would be a lady peach in Yiddish?
Well, I don't know how to say peach in Yiddish because I'm really not fluent.
Okay.
But I, for example, a loch. Do you know what a loch, like a loch and cup? A loch is a hole. Like a loch
oh,
and
okay.
cup is a hole in the head, right?
Ah, yes, yes.
Okay, so Aziz a lochala. Can you figure that out? Zis is like a Aziz a Pesach, a sweet Pesach.
Mm-hmm.
Zisa lochala.
A little hole?
A sweet little hole.
Sweet little hole, okay.
A sweet little hole.
That's
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So but there actually is one word that is sort of the only word that I could ever find that was like really kind of a the equivalent of the C word, you know, in
yeah.
Yiddish, which is shmunda. And that's a kind of a dirty word. I've never heard anybody say it. Actually,
yeah.
my mother-in-law did know it. But my mother speaks fluent Yiddish. I'd never heard it. You know, a lot of people didn't know it. Although when I was a kid, one of my neighbor kids used the word shmoni to just refer to, like, you know, a woman's private parts. But it was like a kiddie word.
Yeah.
And we thought it was just like a made up word coming that came from nowhere. That was a family word. But now I realize that it was probably the diminutive of shmunda.
Hmm.
You know. And I like the word shmooney. I think it's very funny. I think it's a great word for a woman's private parts.
I think it's an excellent word. I'm going to use that from now on.
Shmooney's a great. It's my personal favorite word for that. But but there's also people use knish, and they use pierga, which really means pierogi. But like a knish is not, you know. You wouldn't titter if somebody said that word. I mean, your first thought, I think, if you heard the word knish, would be a savory potato pastry.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard, like, women being maybe have referred to it. Oh, what a tasty knish she is.
Yeah, but it's not like a
hot tamale kind of a thing.
Right, exactly. But it's not really like the dirty meaning of it wouldn't be the first thing I think that pops
into
my head.
No, not even close.
It really needs
close.
To be.
That
it really
sweet.
Needs to be in context, you know. So I had to make up a whole bunch of little words for various female parts and for various sexual positions, which of course, you know. Certainly, and if they, you know, maybe people describe sexual positions, you know, at some point, but not to my knowledge, you know, like nobody who speaks fluent Yiddish is going to share that with me at this point, because it's either like anybody, they're either older than 80 or they're an Orthodox Jew, so they either don't know those words or they don't want to know from those words. So I had to make them up. And also drug words is another thing that doesn't really exist in Yiddish. I mean, there's a word like narcotic is narcotic.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. There's no words for, like, you know, like in English, you know, you want to say smack, there's weed, there's, you know, there's all kinds of words for.
Well, we can, instead of smack, be schmack. Get some good stuff. Good stuff.
Well, like
good stuff.
Schnee, you know, schnee
yeah.
is like snow. So, you know, that's a good word for cocaine.
Sure.
You know, or meshugana tabak, you know, for like wacky weed.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, as I said, it's like sexual positions. For example, one that I use all the time is, do you know who Menashe Skolnick was? Do you know this name, Menashe Skolnick?
Very familiar name.
Okay, he was a star of the Yiddish stage and screen. And I used to have a boyfriend who used to call a menage a trois, a menage a trois, like M-E-N-A-S-H-A, menage a trois. And I used to think, is that like is he related to Menashe Skolnick? So now I just call a threesome of Menashe Skolnick, you know, because.
I have a friend whose last name is Skolnick, but I don't think there's any relation.
Probably not. It's a common name, but you can call him Menashe Skolnick.
You know, I noticed that there's a caller in the Bay Area. If that caller would like to speak, press number one on your keypad, so I'll know that you'd like to speak.
Speak.
No, because the way it works is if you don't. Ah, okay, good. We got a winner. Hold on here.
We got a live one. Okay.
We got a live one. Hello.
The word that I heard as a youngster for the word you're looking for was Schwanz.
Schwanz.
No, for yeah. man. For a man.
For women.
No. Schwanz means tail.
Kale?
not in like the English where you say you get a piece of tail, like a tail, okay, like an animal's tail. So it's like a penis. A schwant is definitely.
But tail is also referred to women.
Only in English.
Yeah, and then it was brought over for Yiddish.
That's my
memory, and so sue me. You know, sue me.
So
Ashur Skolnick was Romania, no?
No, that was Aaron Lebedev was Romania.
Close. What do I know? In the Bay
that's
Area,
we're not
very good at the at the expressions. So in New York, I would have been right. Here, I'm wrong. What can I tell you?
Well, maybe there you're wrong. Maybe there you're right, because there's nobody there to correct you.
Yeah. And somebody would say to me, I remember as a kid, so, hey, Hobde and Budurain, do you know what that means?
Have a what?
Hey, Hobde and Budurain. Ask people if they heard that expression. I haven't heard
it
for 50
years. I have you in the bath. I have you. It's like I have you in the bath. But
yeah,
it means like it basically means go screw yourself, like go. I got you in the toilet, like. It's,
that's right. That's very good, very good. That's what you would say. Helden Butterine is a put down, no?
Yeah, it's like the equivalent of it's equivalent to go screw yourself. It literally means I have you in the toilet.
And then
you know,
And then I would say to you, Ein Kleinigkeit.
What was that last one?
Ein Kleinigkeit.
I don't know that. Or I'm not hearing
too
it.
Too bad, because I'd love to know what it means.
Oh.
My mother would say that to me all the time when I did something good or something interesting. She would say, Ein Kleinigkeit. I wish somebody would call in and give me the literal meaning of that.
A kleinigkeit is like a little,
Ein kleinigkeit.
A little, a smallness. It means a smallness. Kleinigkeit. It means a smallness, like a little,
no,
like
but
a little
didn't
thing.
Mean, she didn't mean it that way. When she said that, she would pound her chest, with glee. With glee, she said, "Oh, hey." Ein Kleinigkeit. She was very happy when she said that.
Maybe she meant like it's one of those. It's a small thing, but it makes me happy. Like it's a small pleasure or something.
Do you
know,
madam, that for 50 years I've been trying to get a definition of that. 50 years I've failed, and I failed again. I don't know what it means, but it's a memory that I like to.
I'm telling you what it means.
No, you're giving me the literal
meaning. I don't know.
What does it mean when she was pounded her chest and said, "Hey, clinic in my boy chick."
A comment from the chat room says means being proud.
Okay, that's good. Being proud. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think I've said enough. I'm going to get off, but I'm so happy. I've had a 50-year quest for Ein Kleinigkeit, and I got it made for tonight. I got the answer. I got to thank you, and your guest, I thank you. It's been a pleasure to hear both of you talking.
Well to
my
you.
My heart is good. I can't tell you how wonderful it
made
me feel.
Well, to you, sir, I say, Leben auf dein Kippele.
Leben auf dein Buch. My, du weißt, was ich sagst zu dir. Leben auf dein Buch. Du weißt. It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing, because my father would say that. 11 of dein Buch, or dein Plätze, all body parts, but he never went below the waist. Funny man.
No.
Anyway,
right.
Thank you very much.
Thank
I'll
you.
Listen up to the rest of the conversation.
Okay.
It's wonderful.
And buy the
thank
book,
you.
Darling. Buy
thank
the book.
You so
you never
much.
Know. You'll learn something, maybe.
Yeah, well, the name of the book, please. Give me the name. A nice plug for the book. What is it?
Dirty Yiddish Slang. You could buy
say
it on
again.
Amazon. Dirty Yiddish Slang.
Dirty? D-I-R-T-Y?
Yeah.
Yes, like schmutzig.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, thank you. I'm buying.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
I enjoyed it. Bye.
Okay, back to hold.
back to,
okay.
So where was we?
We were talking, we were just doing the plug for the book. And then, and speaking of books, I know you have another book coming.
Well, I have another book called Zen Jewish Humor,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's sort of done, but I'm redoing it. That one is self-published, but I'm revamping that book. And then the next one that I'm working on is Yiddish for Hipsters. So I'm going to really try to bring Yiddish into the modern age and come up with expressions and uses for it that, you know, young people can use.
Will you be having a book launch party in Williamsburg, New York?
In Williamsburg? Maybe
at
I'll have
home
it
of the Hipsters.
The Lubavitcher Center.
Okay.
I became friendly with a Lubavitcher rabbi here who actually helped me with some expressions that I needed to translate because, as I said, I had the idea for an expression in English, but I couldn't get it from English to Yiddish, and he helped me. And the expression was, he raised his staff like Moses and her legs parted like the Red Sea.
Oh my.
And he translated it for me. God bless him. He was a good sport. He was a really good sport.
Did he turn colors when you?
No. He was an unbelievably good sport. I just brought him a copy of the book, and he loved it. He says he looked at it, and then a few minutes, then I saw him outside in the neighborhood a little bit later, and he goes, "I love this book." He says, "I wanna. Where can I get more of them? I want to give them to friends." And I'm thinking, "Oh my God, could you imagine this book, the dirty Yiddish slang, become the, you know, all the Lubavitcher rabbis, you know, reading it?"
in secret. Wow. So, you know, as we're starting to wind down the show, so why don't you tell me a little bit briefly about some of the other stuff you do, that because I know you speak, you coach, you teach, you this.
I do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So what else do? I teach greeting card design
mm-hmm.
at the new school at Parsons. So I do that, like in the spring and in the fall. That's kind of fun. I enjoy that. That's basically, you know, marketing and, you know, how to design cards to make them marketable. And as I said, I have the party entertainment business. That's pretty much a full service party entertainment industry, a business for the private parties, corporate events, whatever. And I'm also a licensed hypnotist. Watch out, I'm going to hypnotize you. And
I'm getting sleepy.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm always sleepy.
Oh, okay.
It's self-hypnosis. Maybe that's my problem. Maybe I'm hypnotizing myself. Hypnosis and coaching and NLP and with a specialty being in personal relationships.
Mm.
And dating and that sort of thing. And I do have the website, which you posted on your page so kindly, which is artofepiphany.com. And that's really kind of serious-ish dating, coaching kind of website with advice and articles and that sort of stuff about just how to be happier, how to have better relationships in general.
Oh,
so,
that's a good thing.
It's a very good thing. I do all kinds of stuff, you know. Whatever pays the rent. You know?
Oh,
Yeah, go ahead.
I think we have another caller from the 908 area code. Raise their hand.
Okay.
We didn't have 908 before, did we? I don't think
no,
so.
No, we had seven.
We had 973.
978.
Okay.
908 is New Jersey.
908.
Okay.
I'm about to bring you onto the call. Hello, do you have a question for the booby?
Well, I don't know if it's a question so much as to say that Adrienne Gay, that stuff sounds too good to be true. She's amazing.
Thank you, darling.
She's amazing. She is multi-talented, and I am the Catholic schoolgirl to her art of that'd be great in Yiddish.
I know who this is.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, darling.
I have enjoyed her cards. I have enjoyed everything she does. It's amazing.
Oh, but you have your... Now
but
I feel like Howard Stern, you have your
crazy
radio on in the background, so I'm hearing you again twice.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've enjoyed her Yiddish to no end. I only wish I could speak it better. But I couldn't get the show, and I just got in. And I'm just a big fan of Miss Gusloff, and I just wanted to thank you for getting her on your show.
Oh, my. It's a thrill. It's a thrill. So, and you'll get to listen to the
back
whole show.
Back on sometime, okay?
Absolutely.
Thanks for radio show. I'm going to grab it again.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
Have
thank
a good
you,
one.
Okay. Zai goes on to you. I'm going to put you back on hold.
And she's gone. Get the cane.
Okay. I'm just having so much fun.
Good. That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about.
Well, that and the hokey pokey.
I was you beat me to it.
Yeah.
You really did. You're scaring me because you keep on having the same thoughts.
My father used to say all the time. He used to give these pronouncements of advice. You know, and he would say, "And that, my dear, that's what it's all about." And I would look at him and I'd say, "I thought the hokey pokey was all about."
Exactly. So you put your left foot in, you put your right foot out.
I was always a smart ass, you know. Terrible.
Well, I think you and I must have been separated at bris.
At bris?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Separated at bris. I just threw that
you,
in there.
You were, maybe.
No, I'm one of us was. Anyway. So we're gonna close out our show. I want to first of all thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure, my
this
pleasure.
This was a thrill. I
a
had
Mahaya.
A lot of fun to be the last show of on Coach's Corner for the year 2012. And again,
and maybe forever if
maybe
the world
forever
ends on Friday, you know, could happen.
You know, years from now, thousands of years from now, the Mayans when they come back, they'll find the one thing they'll find is this show. Recorded for posterity.
Maybe
it's a good thing.
Maybe somehow it's getting beamed into space, and like you know, some alien planet is picking it up, and this is all they know of the Earth.
And on that planet,
really
they will
weird,
eventually speak Yiddish.
Speak Yiddish.
It's unbelievable.
The planet Kreplach.
But you know the good news is they have discovered the incredible similarity between the Mayan calendar and an Oreo cookie. They seem to look almost identical, and the Oreo cookie has been translated to say, "Don't worry about it; it's not going to happen." So.
As long as you have cookies, there's nothing to worry about.
Exactly, cookies are a good thing.
Cookies
so
are a good thing.
So let's just one last time give us your website and
okay.
how people may contact you.
Okay, so the Bubby website is www.bubbygram.com. That's BUBBYGRAM, like a Mary, bubbygram.com. And there's lots of funny stuff on there. If you go to that page, go to there's a Yiddish dictionary, and you can go to the Wacky Fun Stuff page, and there's all kinds of crazy narishkeit over there, and Jewish jokes and all kinds of stuff. And then on a more serious note, we have the... artofepiphany.com, and if you can't spell epiphany, you're going to have to look that up. E-P-I-P-H-A-N-Y, artofepiphany.com. So that's, as I said, more serious and, more about becoming a happy, well-adjusted person.
And if you don't know how to spell it, you can just go onto the show page here. I have the links right there. And you can just click away. And again, I want to thank you for being on my show.
Thank you so much for having me, Mr. Andrew.
And you're very welcome. We will be back in 2013. God willing.
God willing.
Exactly. And you, the Shayna Puna, the Shayna Punam, I thank you very much. He's like a
thank
zun.
You, Boychik. Thank
and,
you.
And we'll be back next year.
Thank you, honey.
Good night.
Night. Bye.